Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today, a look at Living Arts New Genre Festival, which runs through March 3rd. For 19 years, the New Genre Festival has been providing Tulsans with an opportunity to see the very leading cutting edge in new artistic endeavors, in interdisciplinary art, in performance and video art, and genre-defying artists and acts in music, dance, theater, and the visual arts. In a few minutes, we'll hear from one of this weekend's featured guests, Chicago-based performance artist Erica Mott. She performs her piece Revised and Revisited tomorrow and Saturday night at the Liggett Studio as a part of the festival. But first, an overview with Steve Liggett, Living Arts Artistic Director and the organizer of New Genre 19. Steve Liggett, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us. New Genre 19, it's hard to believe that Living Arts has been putting on this incredible festival for 19 years.
Yeah, and actually now we are one of the longest standing performance festivals in the United States. They don't last as long as we have.
And that's a tribute to, I guess, the leadership and also just the audience that sort of embraces this sort of walk out onto a limb, if you will, because it really is that at times.
We call it adventurous art for adventurous audiences.
And you've made changes over the years, and in fact, now this year we're in the midst of the festival. You've sort of turned it into a series of weekend events rather than trying to pack everything into a week or a week and a half, and it seems a little more sane, I would say. But you still have incredible cutting-edge artists coming to the city. Give us an example of what we're going to see over the next couple of weeks.
Okay, well, we are this weekend we have the closing of two installations at Living Arts. One is You Complete Me, which is a really interesting collaboration of engineers and musicians and artists and educators from Wichita in the gallery right now. So we're having a special closing for them on Friday from 5 to 7. And that also closes out the Eye for Eye exhibit, which is in collaboration with Tulsa Opera's Dead Man Walking, which is a group of artists looking at how they feel about capital punishment. Then the other thing that is happening this weekend, that the performances are Spontaneous Cinema Music Dance, and that is a really interesting, truly in-the-moment piece that it will be a combination of live video editing by Charlie Woodman, who used to be at OU teaching video art. Now he's in Philadelphia. And four incredible musicians that have been brought in from New York and Philadelphia. And four dancers who are the heads of four of Tulsa's finest contemporary dance companies. That will be at the Dungeness Theater at 8 o'clock, both Friday and Saturday nights.
Now, is it exactly as the title suggests, Spontaneous Cinema Music Dance, or is this something they've been collaborating on for some time?
No, this is an in-the-moment, totally improvisational moment between the videographer who is going to be mixing science fiction images together with television images. The musicians are going to interpret what he puts up there in the moment, and then the dancers are going to move to what they see and hear from the musicians and the videographer. So it truly will never be performed like this again.
Interesting.
And they haven't met each other until about half an hour ago.
so we're taping here a couple of days ahead, and mm-hmm. So they've just met each other, and they'll sort of maybe talk about some ideas, but really you want this to be of the moment.
Exactly.
As opposed to seeing and reacting.
A lot of what we are finding in contemporary art is spontaneous. When we separate theater from performance art, we really are talking about pieces that have not been rehearsed. This is a truly unique experience that has never happened again and will never happen again.
Art of improvisation is part of the theater. It's part of music. We don't think of it as much in film, you know, in videography, but obviously it exists, and dance, improv as well. So you're really melding all of it in
right.
the course of an evening.
Now, on the same weekend, Erica will be doing her piece, Erica Mott, with Revised and Revisited. That one's at Liggett Studio. And we're very excited about having her in town right now. She's a fantastic performer, working with puppetry and movement and text-based things.
And she performs regularly in Chicago, and I guess at residencies and sort of special events like this all around the country, too.
She does, indeed. Yeah. And she's also on the staff at Lynx Hall, which is a performance space there in Chicago. And then next weekend...
Next weekend is the big weekend. You've got, six different events going on next weekend?
I haven't stopped to count. I'm too afraid to count. It is a large weekend. We have two new installations that are mounted in our gallery. One is by Benjamin Entner, who is doing a completely new piece for Tulsa. He's working with the material called Tyvek, which is normally used in construction for
walls, right?
Yeah, it's insulation material, basically. But he's sewing that into large inflatable sculpture, which will fill the South Gallery. In the North Gallery, we have Laura Tanner, and she is from Indiana, and she'll be doing an installation of what she calls quilts, but they're very much mixed media assemblage artworks.
And I assume this involves sewing arts as well, because it's called Darned Delicates.
Darned Delicates, yes.
Actually sewn.
Right, right. And there are all kinds of materials from scraps of cloth to silk-screened images to sticks and all kinds of things. And she thinks about them the way a person might have at one time thought about quilts.
Now, will this exhibit go on past the festival?
Yes, it goes through the end of... March. You'll have to look at our website, livingarts.org, for all of the specifics on these. And then at the Nightingale Theater, we have two performances the third weekend, and that is Lindsay Allgood's Palpitations. She's an artist, actually, from Norman that is going to be doing an amazing piece dealing with the feminine mystique. And then we are bringing in one of the classic video environment artists, Kathy Rose, to do two new pieces that she has, The Cathedral of Emptiness and Interiosity.
Tell us a little bit about Kathy Rose, for people who don't know her.
Kathy is an artist who studied a lot of no drama.
Japanese no
theater. And she works with the mask. She works with very minimal movements, and she embeds her body into an environment of very surreal, eerie, and sometimes bizarre video images. So she has multiple screens that she's showing her videos on, and then she is then embedded into these. And she's been doing this for 30 years.
Wow.
And is a classic videography performance artist. And these are the things that you don't get to see a lot of times in Tulsa, which is one of the reasons why we do the New Genre Festival. If you travel, you see this kind of thing in different parts of the United States all the time.
Mm-hmm. And here you have sort of a pioneering person in this sort of field, probably involved in its infancy and still working to this day, embracing
absolutely
new technology and sort of evolving what she does.
Creating new work all the time, much the same way I heard on NPR the other day, the interview with Meredith Monk, who we brought in not too long ago. And, I've always really admired these amazing creative people.
Is that part of your philosophy, is sort of these sort of icons in the new performance tradition, as well as people we probably... Even if you are a devotee, you might not have heard of these people.
Well, Living Arts was based on the premise of actually showcasing living artists. And so we try to bring in those people who have been sentinel to really changing the way we think about art in general. And then we also want to portray and feature artists from our own region who are really stepping out into new areas or new genres.
Yeah. Information on all the new genre events at livingarts.org. Steve Liggett, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich.
Steve Liggett of Living Arts describing the events surrounding New Genre Festival 19, which takes place this weekend and next at venues around downtown Tulsa. For more information, visit livingarts.org. Well, now we return to featured artist Erica Mott. The Chicago-based performance artist has created 10 original works and collaborated with new arts projects in Chicago, Toronto, and San Francisco. She was recently a Santa Fe Institute artist in residence and has done work in Canada, Iceland, and France, in addition to performing regularly in Chicago and at the Minneapolis Fringe Festival and the Washington Improv Theater, to name a few. She served as artistic director of the Muka Project Theater in Johannesburg, South Africa, and is a faculty member at Second City and the Looking Glass Theater in Chicago. She's a performer, director, and divisor of artistic work. She works through mass, clown, Butoh-inspired movement, and site-specific performance. She'll be performing her work revised and revisited this Friday and Saturday evening at 8 o'clock at the Liggett Studio. She joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Erica Mott, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich, for having me.
Looking forward to your performances at the New Genre Festival. Revised and Revisited involves lots of chalk.
Yes.
An unusual dress.
Absolutely.
Your work usually revolves around some sort of central question that you're sort of working out through performance. What is the question involved at the heart of Revised and Revisited?
I was really interested in, there were two questions that were the themes of the work. One is, what do we remember and what do we forget and why? And the second one is, what do we value and what do we discard along the journey? So in issues of value, my first degree was in international development and economics before I went back into arts. I did a lot of theater as a youth and then left it and came back to it again. But in that small interim of time, those 4 years when I was in the diplomacy track and living in Washington, D.C., I just became very, very interested in the value of things, the value of labor, the value of objects. And that factors time and time again into my performance. So you can see in Revised and Revisited, I use multiple different types of objects as representations. And as those objects transform, I ask questions about value. What now, do we take with us?
Now, as I was seeing the excerpts I've seen of the show, mm-hmm. isn't there a question about family history or of, you know, I guess your family story of coming to America is at the heart of this as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was part of when I work with a project for a 3-year period, I have central questions. And one of those questions was about this type of what do we remember and what do we forget? And at the time that I was starting to develop this, it was quite a heated debate on immigration happening in Arizona. And I really... as I said before, I was trained in politics, international politics and domestic politics, and I became really interested in how can I represent this story or how can I bring these questions to light through my artwork around this type of thing is who is an immigrant? How can one person be illegal? What does it mean? And how has the shifting of our culture over time gone from being so pro-immigrant to anti-immigrant? Or is that a mythology in and of itself? And have we constantly been telling ourselves this mythology through the years? So what do we know?
And,
what do we remember? And
both at the same time. Yeah, both at the same time, actually.
Exactly.
We're pro-immigrant, but we're also anti-immigrant as you look at our history. And,
yeah.
And your particular heritage, I assume, mm-hmm. is Northern European. We
it
hear
is.
Some German music and
yes.
and in mm-hmm. the course of the piece. And you have this backdrop of, are they chalkboards or are they just sort of slates for you to...
It's an oil-cured chalk cloth. So mm-hmm. it's a type of oil-cured cloth that takes chalk, just like a chalkboard would. I've lived and worked in different parts of Africa, and we used to use it to make schools. Mm-hmm. In different parts of Africa that I worked in. And I was always like, this is just such a fascinating material. I love the way that it moves. And I really, once I got back into the arts, I became really interested in sculpture and design. And I really became interested in the possibilities of a mundane material. So that's usually where I start, is with discarded materials, mundane materials. And then I try to figure out ways to make them magical, to transform them as a form of helping us re-envision our environment.
And in this case, it becomes a backdrop where you write us a lecture.
Yes.
and again, they're based on these central questions, right? Of what we remember, what we forget,
right.
Who we remember, who we forget.
Exactly.
And you're using a variety of objects from a record player with, again, mm-hmm. some German language old recordings to, and you're using this dress that you create out of this cloth, which you
yes.
write on,
mm-hmm.
and you actually use it as a percussion instrument at times during the piece.
Yes, a percussion instrument. There's also parts of the dress that come off and transform so it can look more of my ethnic heritage, which is Swiss German. Mm-hmm. So the little capes or the aprons become an active part of it that I can move the costume around to represent different character studies that I'm doing from my heritage as a mode of starting with origin to talk about a greater issue of cultural erasure, of what happens to our heritage, to our knowledge when we cross borders through time.
Now, do you actually, as a part of this, do you actually explore your own family story?
I spent a year and a half excavating.
What did you learn?
Well, I learned a great deal, and that actually really shifted the piece for me.
How far back did your family come here?
1860s was the first crossover. And what I found with that actually was that there's a record of my great-great-great-grandfather entering the boat, and there's no record of him exiting the boat.
So he was illegal.
Well, yes, that's what, and you know, there's this metaphor for obviously him being illegal, but there's also this great metaphor for memory and silence that mm-hmm. became central to the performance installation itself. So a lot of the writings are what I remember and what nobody remembers. So I started interviewing family members, went back to the graveyard his wife was buried at, started talking to the German settlements in Ohio, which is where they ended up settling, and he disappeared. Mm. They don't know if he was thrown over on board. They don't know if he died and was disposed of on board, but there's no memory of him. And this is something that was news to all of my family as we were talking and discovering and excavating. And this became a greater issue of like, oh, okay, well, what are these silences? What do we carry with us that we don't even know we carry with us?
That's an incredible story because, you know, you would think that story would last, you know.
Yeah.
The patriarch died on the way coming here. You know, that could almost be almost family lore. In fact, it became lost and never spoken about.
Yeah. And that sort of level of not speaking about trauma became also another really interesting level of taking the personal and making it political or global as far as like all these different ways that people cross borders, what we think we know and what we really can't possibly know, and the greater discussion around how and why we erase culture, you know, mm-hmm. that it's not one grand entity of this government institution is erasing this culture, but there's just so many different nuances and levels and complications, and art's a really great way to do that.
And I assume this piece also addresses the personal erasures too, you know, the people that you're in your life and
yes.
no longer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And each one of those, that litany of writing that you're seeing in the video, that's journal perspectives, my writing based from the perspective of all these different people, all these different absences.
You said this took place over a 3-year period.
Yes.
Where do you start when you sort of take an essential question?
Mm-hmm.
You have false starts. Do you say, I want to explore it this way, now I'm going to explore it this way? And then there was a performance piece that you did about your sort of family medical history? Now, was that related to this overall question, or was that yet a different question?
That ended up being a different question, but it did start under this umbrella.
Uh-huh.
I think that the three-year time period is just like a beginning to allow me the space and time for failure, which I think is crucial to every element of innovation. And because we don't take time for failure, it actually limits our triumph in our work, in our lives. So I build in time for failure. I do multiple false starts. I bring tons of material into the workspace. It's just like throwing spaghetti at the wall and then something sticks and you're like, oh, that's the road I want to go down right now.
Now, this particular piece uses a variety of found objects. I know one image I saw that was sort of arresting was this idea of looks like maybe it's an attaché or maybe a small suitcase,
mm-hmm.
and you're putting waves. And then you have the little boats, did we come to this country for monetary gain? And there's a little boat made out of money. It's very, very clever, very cleverly done. And I assume that's what you're doing with all your found objects. You say, you know, here's a found object. How can I help tell a story with this?
Yes. I mean, I look at the object as another actor or player on stage or dancer, depending. So I look at movement quality. I look at weight. I look at potential for transformation in it. Like you said, the dress becomes percussive. Well, they started out with a bolt of chalk cloth, and I figured, okay, well, if I want this to be the ocean, what are the possibilities of it being the ocean? And it just happened that my heritage, this sort of Swiss German, the circle skirt was the ultimate outfit for a woman at that time. And it just happens that the circle skirt creates this wonderful percussive sound when one dances in it, mm-hmm. and allows that space for those things to happen. So all these happy accidents happen, but it comes through spending that really time in the studio, being very patient with the material and bringing out its qualities.
And it sounds like different pieces came out of this three-year exploration. There's this piece where we talked about that sort of investigated medical issues or medical themes of family history.
Yes, it was another form of absencing, especially the lineage of women in my family and how that many of them had gotten ill over time and just started looking at that. And that's now becoming a project I'm working on right now.
Is this the Victory Project?
No,
the Victory Project has
it's in its third year right now.
And I've seen images that it's very unusual because it involves the very innovative uses of crutches.
Yes.
Dancing with crutches.
I'm very interested in polar opposites, polarities, and materials as well. So crutches that become wings, calling into question ideas of ability and disability and what that means, or building multiple limbs. I have a series of what I call puppets, but they're prosthesis, so that I add three extra legs to my leg. And that mimics flight machines, failed flying machines, but also what prosthesis and medical biotechnology may help us or hinder us.
And you also had a piece that's sort of based on the European clown tradition, which I find really interesting that most people in America look at it and go, well, this is very weird.
Yes.
but the European clown tradition is just very different from our clown tradition. And
absolutely.
And you did a whole piece. Is that something you studied at some point?
Yes, I did. I've studied with a couple of clown practitioners. I've studied with Philippe Gallier, who's based in France. France and Belgium. I've studied a lot with the North American clown traditions. There's a Pachinko clown tradition, which is based in Canada. And the Pachinko clowns are very interesting because they mix what one might call buffoonery with clowning. And that's very interesting to me, too. Buffoonery is more of the dark stepchild of clowning. You know, clowns are considered the children of God, and buffoons are considered the children of the underworld. And so you sort of have a nice mixture there. And for me, awkward juxtapositions.
So is that sort of mean-spirited tricks, or I'm probably being
mean-spirited tricks, but willingness to go more towards the grotesque, so that you can have grotesque and wonder at the same time. And buffoons tend to be a little bit more political, whereas clowns tend to be a little bit more innocent.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. And this piece, Revised and Revisited, takes place Friday and Saturday night at the Liggett Studio as a part of the New Genre Festival 19. Erica Mott is my guest. She's a performance artist based out of Chicago. And you said you started out in theater. You went the international diplomacy a bit in Washington.
Yes.
What drew you back into the theater? And I should mention you work as a faculty member at Second City and Looking Glass Theater, two of the most respected cultural institutions of Chicago. And you're teaching, I guess, improv and theatrical techniques and improv there. What brought you back to the theater, and specifically this sort of subset of intersection between art and theater in performance pieces?
I think what brought me back to the theater, well, certainly what brought me back to the theater was that I was, you know, I always wanted to be in the theater, but, you know,
yeah,
my family
everybody
wanted me to have a sensible
be.
Degree.
Yes.
And so I went and I got a sensible degree in international diplomacy. I don't know how sensible that was, but I ended up my first international work. It ended up sending me to West Africa. So I'm working for a French NGO. I'm doing research for them, and the culture that I'm living in is a Pular culture in rural Senegal. And the primary way that they communicate with each other is through artistic practices: singing, dancing, storytelling. These various things are so alive and well in the culture, and it's the health and well-being of the culture was completely embedded in the artistic.
And you say, why am I doing writing reports and why am I not doing something like this?
I said, you know, there has to be a way for these things to be wed. And I think that that's why it wasn't easy for me to reintegrate myself into what would be called maybe the straight theater community, and I'm doing finger quotes.
Mm-hmm.
It just because I didn't find it terribly political, and I wanted to start creating work that intersected with multiple communities, and I wanted whoever was watching my work to be a subsection of the world. And so I started doing my work on the streets or in train stations, or when my first commission in Chicago was to the opening of Millennium Park's Luray Gardens. And so, you know, thousands of people came to see the work, and that was the audience that I wanted, the audience that I interrupted their daily patterns with the work, and therefore we had a dialogue.
But it's sort of guerrilla, too. In a way.
In a way it is, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, whereas as a straight theater, you know, you can be political, you can have strong takes on this, but there's always this commercial, you know, we have to put people in the seats, too.
Sure.
You know, that there's always that concern.
Absolutely. And I think it's important as an artist to think about things from all perspectives, you know, it's like having a good business sense as an artist, being a creative entrepreneur, those are all positive things. But I think that in that effort to get people in the seats, we sometimes don't question the systems that put us in a situation to put people in the seats. When you get on the street, you really get a sense of what are the greater questions, you know, are they economic questions? Are they a fact that we now have an education system that doesn't train critical viewers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it that, you know,
is that something you do as a part of your practice, is doing pieces out on the street at this
mm-hmm.
point?
Yep.
You know, I mean, I would think you're in theaters and festivals and you are,
mm-hmm.
but is the street still a part of your sort of practice and working out these big questions that you're talking about?
Yeah, I do site-specific performance. I do less of it directly on the street, and that's primarily because Chicago's laws are so strict now on busking that lot of us have been kicked off the streets. But I work a lot with the city. I do partnerships with the city, so they put me in abandoned storefronts, sanctioned site-specific performance. But recently, the Victory Project, we staged it in the old Makesfield Airport in downtown Chicago. So
mm-hmm.
people walking their dogs along the lake were, you know, interrupted by women dancing with giant crutch wings and, you know, came into the performance. And most of my work now is larger, so it's more ambulatory, but it's in site-specific.
Do you learn from having it out where people who had no notion of, I'm going to see a very out there sort of cutting edge performance art, I'm going to be a part of that. I mean, they have no notion of that, and all of a sudden they're there. Do you learn from that experience?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like that, to me, that has been the greatest learning curve out of all of my training, are the people that didn't know they were going out to watch a performance when they left their house.
I think you would learn a lot, because for people who have no preconceived notions, that tells you that you're, you know, the symbolism you're using and the imagery you're using to tell this story either connects with the casual viewer or not.
Exactly.
And that makes your piece more powerful.
And you get immediate criticism, you know, like, I mean, immediate. And I mean criticism in the best sense of the word. You know what works and you know what doesn't.
As well as this sucks.
You know? Well, yeah. No, I've been heckled before. And it's really quite fascinating. When we were doing the piece for Luray Gardens, we were doing just the dress rehearsal. And there was an entire family there. And there, you know, they had their picnic out. And they were just like, hey, crazy ladies in the bags, you know, because I devised a series of costumes made out of plastic shopper bags, but that reflected the different prairie flowers that
uh-huh.
were reflected in Luray Gardens, because Luray Gardens was, even though they said it was restored prairie, it was actually built on a landfill. So I wanted to, you know, like that's part of, I research spaces that I site specifically perform
mm-hmm.
in. So that was part of it. And they were shouting at us. And then we performed the next day and they came back and they tapped me on the shoulder. They're like, remember us? We came back, you know, because so there's something in it for them that they really like. They wanted to figure it out and get it.
Erica Mott with us here on Studio Tulsa. She performs her work Revised and Revisited this Friday and Saturday night at the Liggett Studio. Details at livingarts.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.